Have you tried going back and playing the games you played as a kid?
We're talking nostalgia overload, fun facts, and seeing if we can remember how to beat games we haven't played in 30 years.
Come join us. Retro Recall is all about nostalgia and reliving those years of zero responsibility.
Each episode, John makes me play a game from our youth, and I challenge him to do something in that game, and then the loser has to try one of the worst games ever made.
It's fun, it's terrible, but most of all, it's a look back at simpler times.
In the first episode, we try Double Dragon 2, and let's just say that John is still having nightmares about some of the terrible games he had to play.
You say that, but I'm not the only one. Ghoul School?
Dear God.
Check out Retro Recall on YouTube and your favorite audio podcast platforms.
There are links in the main show description, or just search Retro Recall.
Retro Recall. Come join us. Games are always better with friends.
Retro Recall.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, after Brad is fully recovered from his disappointment of Games Workshop releasing the other Vulcan model, not the one he wanted.
Robble.
And also not giving us a codex with salamanders, we're going to cover the almost as noble as ultramarines, salamanders.
Salamanders!
Mm-hmm. As always, 40K Lorecast is a weekly show covering the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please follow the cast, comment on it. It really does help us out, and it takes a second of your guys' lives. If you like the cast, you want to hear more of it, come on over to our YouTube page, the 40K Lorecast. There you're going to find some of our earlier episodes converted over with imagery, our live Q&A session, and our other show, The History of 40K, plus some other ones coming up in 2026. This is 2026 or 2027, and yeah, it's all there already for you guys. Congratulations. You're late to the party, but you don't have to wait for anything.
Well done, John. Hey, well done.
It's always a win. It's always a win. In the show notes, there's also a link to our Patreon. Our Patreon's really helping us out quite a bit with equipment, expansion, this kind of stuff. We're able to actually hire editors and the like to help us expand in new areas. Our Patreon has one tier. It gets you the show ad-free. It's $4.99 a month. That's it. Or if you're more the quiet type, 4.34 euros. Now that's today dollars. I never know what the euro is going to be when you guys listen to this, by the way. But let's just say you live in Memmingen, which is in Bavaria, which I actually visited randomly in 2004 on my way to Oktoberfest. We were driving from Italy all the way in and were exhausted and decided we didn't deal with Munich. So we found on a map, because that's how old this was, a paper map, we found a little town, pulled over, and it was so cool looking. Because it's like a little, like almost gingerbread house looks. And the whole town is centered around kind of quality of life. There's actually a very low speed limit. The goal is to make it so you never feel rushed. That's a nice thing. But they have a really cool piece of history. Memmingen, or Memmingen, I'm probably pronouncing this wrong, and I'm sorry, Germans, but your words are not easy. You keep adding letters to everything till we reach a point where it's just, I don't know what we're trying to say here. But in 1525, this is where the 12 Peasant Articles were written. And for those who don't know history, this was kind of like the Magna Carta, but for the rest of us. The Magna Carta was originally, it did say the king was up to the same laws as the rest of the land, but it wasn't really enforced. It was more the king versus the nobles. The 12 Peasant Articles are much cooler. They have things in there like rent has to be proportional to the output of the crop fields. Nobles can't come and make you work for free. Oh, and no more serfs. So anyway, that was a big one, by the way. No more serfs. Also some cool stuff in there about how the priests get paid. There's a lot of things in there. Really, really great, because it's a key part of the Protestant Reformation. So anyway, Memmingen. Lastly, we also have our Discord. So please, if you're looking to interact more, if you have questions for us, let me know. If you live in Memmingen and want to explain to me how I'm supposed to pronounce that, jump on into the Discord and I'd be happy to hear from you. Great community going on right there. A lot of great conversations. We're now getting some good painting competitions going on there, right? Which is really cool.
They got some legit stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's also awesome watching the fitness journey of people. That channel's active, bro. Love it.
We should do one of you. It's not.
I'd still lift really heavy weights, I guess. I
know. Wait, is Brad's after photo worse than his before photo? Shut up.
Wildly worse.
It's all right. To be fair, you're 54. I'm 44. I'm at the point now where I look at photos of myself 10 years ago and just want to die inside. All right. But anyway, let's get into it. 18th Legion. As with every legion, the Salamanders were originally called the 18th Legion. Like all the original chapters, they were created with their Primarch's gene seed, but well before the Primarch was ever discovered. Also before the Chaos Gods teleported the Primarchs away. It's a
over situation. The place.
It's a weird thing. Anyway, each of the legions, the infusion of the Primarch would affect them both mentally as well as physically, creating some disparity in them. Sort of, kind of. And I say sort of, kind of, because in reality, when you read the books, it's not always clear. But the Salamanders are apparently one of the ones that is more affected, much like the Space Wolves. And I think there's another one in there, too. But the Alpha Legion, the 20th, it was Alpha Legion. The Alpha Legion are very unique looking, and they are labeled as having a mystery around their origins. In the case of the Space Wolves, the mystery was at one point it was normal, and then in later writing there was wolf DNA in there, and I think that went away again. I love the
course of Lupkin is there.
I'll be honest. I love Space Wolf players. I don't love Space Wolf lore, but Space Wolf players make me like Space Wolf lore more. Just candidly, they're fun to play against. If you play against Space Wolves and have a bad game, that's weird. Space Wolf players, I think they're the orc players of the Space Marine factions.
Orc players. I love everything about that.
Well, orc players are fun. Not all of them. The vast majority of orc players are fun. Just call a spade a spade. All right. Anyway.
But they are on but that is the biggest, one of the big things from the start is that the Salamanders are listed as unknown origin of far where they went originally until they pick up Vulcan.
Exactly.
On Nocturne.
And there's always potential with that. It's my theory on that has always been cloning, that them, the Wolves and Alpha Legion actually were cloned, not taken from a region, but I digress. One really interesting piece about 18th Legion is that their history dates back to the Unification Wars in a documented sense. So when we talk about 40K lore history, all right, there's a lot of the stuff is, here's a story that's fully redacted and cannot be found anywhere in Imperial records. And I'm going to give it to you over the next 50 pages of this codex, right? But it's not official. This one is actually an official story that is told within the Imperium. And so that makes it a much bigger deal than the super secret thing that everyone's aware of, like the Badab Wars, which are, no one's supposed to know about them at all.
But everybody knows.
2 hours on them.
Anyway, yep.
So Unification Wars were brutal. So the challenge effectively was that all of these techno-barbarian warlords were an issue. Some were pacified more easily than others. And one of the ones that was really hard to pacify were the Ethnarch, which lived in the Caucasus Wastes, which is, by the way, lazy writing on the part of GW, but also genius use of the English language. And I don't know which way I want to go with this, because ethnarchy means a government ruled by an ethnarch. And an ethnarch is a ruler of people with whom he holds like a similar ethnicity or alignment, religion. So a lot of times you would call a religious leader of an area, he's the ethnarch. So clever use of the word, but also kind of lazy that they just went, oh yeah, this is these people over here, they're all the ethnarchs, and then their leader is the ethnarch. All right. Good job, guys. But and I'll be honest, this is one of my favorite part of writing the notes for this. The only reason I knew that word was a real word is because when I typed it into Microsoft Word, I didn't get a red squiggly line. And I went, huh. So this is a real word.
As opposed to the rest of the things that you type in.
Dear God, Aramon. Oh. Anyway, so situated in the Caucasus Mountains of Europe, the Ethnarchs provided to be one of the toughest tests for the Emperor and his forces. The Ethnarch were this incredibly advanced group of techno-barbarians, and it's because they actually possessed a large array of tech dating back to the Age of Technology. What's interesting about that is it's not clear if that technology they possessed the whole time or if it was just in the region they went to.
Yeah, because they have a legion of psykers that are effectively thrall psykers, but also this is before you had psyker armies. So
yeah, they had psykers. they also had their own Thunder Warriors effectively. So they could go toe to toe, and really on defense is where they got nasty. So the Ethnarch had built their entire civilization under the mountains, like deep underground.
Yeah, in dwarven fortresses, basically. They're in bunkers, like miles deep bunkers that their entire civilization's under.
Which is a really cool story until you add to the fact they also had a force field surrounding them that was impenetrable. So they didn't have to dig down into the mountains. They just had a big force field anyway. Look,
they didn't need to, but they wanted to.
Yeah, because everyone wants to live. You know, it's funny. I was about to say everyone wants to live underground, but then I remembered what Earth looked like at this era. Underground.
You probably want to go underground.
Yeah, actually it was better. Huh? Never mind. All right.
Hey, man, how's it outside? Radioactive and weird.
Yeah, all right. Let's go inside. Basically, these were akin to the force fields of Dune, where you cannot shoot them. The only way to deal with this force field is to actually walk up to it and try and penetrate it. Now, the Emperor did try and do that in the early stage of the Unification Wars, and he lost tens of thousands of Thunder Warriors, plus millions of regular troops.
This, and I'm going to get on my little soapbox again. The Emperor is either a genius. Next, he can't even figure out what he's doing. He's playing 4D chess.
Yeah.
And then there's times like this when you're like, which is eventually what he does, and you're like, hey, man, these guys are underground and they don't really affect anything. Leave them there. They don't have any way to affect me. And I'll just come back eventually and do something about it. You're like, why were you wasting everybody? You could just go, oh, there's three exits to their fortress. Just don't let them leave there. Cool. Yeah,
the Emperor is a master of poor impulse control.
Those guys called me a stupid face. I have to go kill them now. Yeah.
And so to Brad's point, exactly what the Emperor did. He just surrounded it with some of his troops and then went and fought the rest of the Unification Wars. But he knew he had to go back there. And so the plan came. He conquered all of the rest of the planet. Now I have to go deal with the Ethnarchs. And it's funny. This is one of many great culminations of the end of... So whatever. It's like the writing is so freaking annoying with this stuff. Because I'm like, well, wait, that wasn't the last battle of the Unification Wars. No, it wasn't. But if you're reading the Salamander Codex... Sure sounds like it was.
It's the one that counted, baby.
Yeah, it's the one that counted the most in this novel. Anyway, plan is to do this massive assault to take down the shields and then kill all of them. And this was known as the assault on the Tempest Galleries. Now, this is how the 18th Legion make their name. The Emperor decides to deploy his special legion of Astartes to the task of taking down the force field, and not Obi-Wan Kenobi style. Rather, they were going to deploy and just basically blow up the power supplies if they could. However, the power supplies are built during the golden age of technology and was really an impossible depth, hundreds of kilometers below the surface. Yeah,
they're like so far.
Yeah. Which, by the way, fun John's side story. This is impossible to dig down that deep. And I know this because we tried. Well, the Russians tried.
Both of us. Come on. Sell the story well, John. The U.S. and Russia were basically going at it in the way we always used to go at it because of the Cold War. And the Russians, the U.S. just went, we're pretty done with this. And the Russians, being Russians, went, no, we're going to keep going. How far? Forever. Well, forever was not forever. Forever was pretty deep. But
it was not. I mean, this was in 1970.
For us.
If you look at it from a comparative standpoint, so in 1970, Russia started digging a hole in the earth. That's the best way to explain it. They gave up 20 years later with the fall of the USSR, by the way, and they discovered something fun. If you try to dig into earth, it gets a lot dense and also gets oddly hot.
Hot.
Yeah, it melted drill bits. So after 20 years of drilling down, they made it 12 kilometers, so 7.5 miles. By the way, you can see that far. The horizon is 13 miles away.
I was just about to say, you also have the fact that is a speck of dust if you talk about the actual width of the earth.
You're nowhere near the mantle. Yeah, exactly. No. Yeah. According to this story, they were 10 to 20 times that depth. I assume using unobtainium and nanotechnology. I
don't know. Duh.
Yeah. So anyway, speaking of going deep, the 18th Legion is going to go even further. So the 18th Legion are tasked with penetrating this subterranean facility, and they can't go through the front door. So they go journey to the center of the Earth, which wasn't a good movie, but the sequel was actually worse.
However, I think the you meant core? To say oh. The core with unobtainium and just drilling it in, baby.
Good God, that movie. I don't
Our suits I only protect us to 3,000 degrees and we're going to hit with 6,000 degrees. No one's going to come back if he comes out there. You're not going to make it 2 feet. Sorry if you didn't see the movie. That makes absolutely no sense.
Oh my God.
But it was so dumb. Yes.
That's like no one can. It's an audio cast. No one can see my face. My jaw started dropping as you began quoting a movie that I looked at and went, yeah, no, I'm not watching that.
It was terrible.
Yeah, because I looked at it and went, yeah, no, I'm not watching that. I'll go rewatch
it. You were correct, sir. Yeah. When you went, hey, that looks terrible. I went, let me take a look and see here. And I went, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, pretty shit. All right. So the 18th Legion have to get down there. So how do they do this? Well, for those of us who played prior editions, we had a really cool Forge World model. And it was so busted, but it was
still Alan has so good. So many of these, by the way.
I think I have three. It's funny. Some of the stuff that goes to Legends, I actually threw away, but I've kept all my orcs and all my termite drills and a couple other random things just in the dream that they might come back, because termite drills were amazing. The burying rhino transport, the front drill could kill a knight because it was 3 attacks, strength 14, AP 4, D3 plus 6 damage, and it had a melta and it had
flames. No. It had multiple meltas.
Yeah. Yeah. These things were awesome. Oh.
It had the melta array.
Yeah. Oh, they were really good in my Death Guard army in the 9th and 8th. Oof. Anyway, so the rest of the Legion and the Custodes are all looking at this going, the rest of the Legions and the Custodes look at this plan of taking these termite drills in and go, all right, well, those guys are all going to die because A, the drills aren't going to get there. And even if they did, they were all going to die taking out the power supply. So the drills take off. And the story's kind of cool. The drills take off and almost immediately, the Emperor's scanners, including his psychers, can't pick them up anymore.
No, I haven't put the soapbox away, so I'm jumping back on it.
Yeah.
What is even going on in the 41st millennium?
With scanning? Yeah.
Yeah. Like what your scanners are, hey, Ted, what is the scanner saying? Ted's just staring out going, I don't see anything. You're like, what about the scanner? Yeah, scanners apparently don't work in this.
I had a thought about that. And, you know, when in the Aliens, when they go to LV-428, right? And they have the scanner for the motion detector. Like, that's technology we had. So maybe at a certain point, we just stop developing and go, scanning's for chumps.
Because it's just, they never know. It's because everybody's always sneaking up on everyone.
Yeah, but it is. It's the same thing with aliens. Think about
it. Yeah, aliens. But like in we the writing, though.
And also with Starship Troopers. So many of these things we deploy to some random place and they're like, oh yeah, we can't see anything down there. Really?
Yeah.
Nothing.
But it also sometimes they go back and go, I've identified every single person on the planet and what they're wearing.
Yeah. You're like, I can mark down hair and eye color for every single person inside this entire Hive City. Really? Cool. Well, is there anything under the Hive City? It's too far to see.
Absolutely no idea. Absolutely. Has anybody got guns? I can't tell you that. I can tell you what kind of jeans they're wearing, though.
Yeah. But, and size, too. Yeah. So anyway, the 18th Legion go in and they disappear from sensors. And the Emperor and his forces just wait, holding their defensive posture. Hours, days, weeks go by. And then in classic writing, a bunch of the advisors go to the Emperor and say, hey, we have to change tactics. Your thing failed. And the Emperor turns to them and says, they shall not fail me. They will return from this fire. This it shall ever be. It's a terrible phrase. But anyway.
It's awesome. You didn't even say it right. You got to give some oomph to it.
Because I actually want to believe the Emperor has like a bad lisp. I think
marriage.
Yeah, marriage. Exactly. they found not fail me. Like it would be amazing. The most powerful man on earth. And he's just got this incredible lisp.
Super high pitched.
Yeah. Oh, that would be equally good. Yeah. Anyway. So right after he says it, of course, the ground begins to shake, the force fields collapse, and all hell breaks loose. Effectively, the entire Emperor's forces go, oh, cool, the force field's down. Let's go stab all of them. And they run in there and begin killing everybody. After they achieve victory as they're dragging the last ethnarchs out to be interrogated and executed, one of the local volcanoes explodes and out pops a termite drill, or maybe a couple of them, carrying 1,000 18th Legionnaries.
Of the 20,000 that went down.
And they, of course, talk to them, and they learn the story. And the story of their battle underground is pretty cool. So they arrive in the underground facility. The 18th Legion is mostly intact. About 90% of them survive the journey. So good job, Mechanicum. Nice job on that drill. The inhabitants of the underground facility are a little surprised. They just... They, in effect, for those of us, we've talked about Necrons before, they, in effect, tunneled into a tomb world. The power supply of the Ethnarchy was not their own. It's most likely they conquered something where this was already there, because whoever put it there, it was millennia prior. And the 18th Legion opens up, and they just get blank stares from the things that are all sitting down there. Now, what sucks for them is that the things that are down there, this whole area is so deep that rock is molten. Metal is molten down there. So you've got men of iron who are, in effect, who are built to work in this area, who haven't seen a biologic being in...
And the answer is yes.
Yeah. And then they kind of look at... So I like the idea of they looked at each other, both of them, and then... These Denzians just went, all right, let's just kill all them and attack. And the 18th Legion learns a pretty fun story. These things were very well armored, so armored that all the weapons they brought with them did nothing but make them angrier, like Mongo. But unlike Mongo, they were not only pawn in Game of Life. I love that movie so much. I love that movie so much. Anyway, after about the 2/3 of the Legion die, pretty quick, they discover that they need a plan because they run away. The only way they're able to destroy these men of iron super robots was to collapse a building on top of them. They could crush them to death, but they couldn't shoot them. They couldn't hit them with thunder hammers. It just did nothing. So they decide they figure out, however it works, that all of these men of iron have a central processing intelligence. Not that dissimilar from the Votan cores. So if they can just take out the main node, then everything else will fall apart. Now, of course, the main node is not just sitting there hanging out having tea. So they had to go deal with it. It's very heavily defended. And this story makes the 18th Legion sound more badass. So that's why we're going to cover it. They're going to make a diversion. So someone has to make a diversion over there so that it'll open up the core so they can hit the core. And the problem is the people who do the diversion are going to die. And the 18th Legion have to do a lottery. The lottery, though, is not for the diversion. The lottery is for the main assault, because every single Astartes of the 18th Legion volunteered for the suicide mission. Because they all were saying, I would rather die and save my brother than be the one who survives. And which I was like, all right. That's actually pretty badass. So they had to do a lottery for who didn't get to go on the suicide mission. Good job.
You're welcome.
Yeah. If you want to know more about this, it's in Horus Heresy Book 2. It's over about 3 pages, and it's well written. But the quick hits are the distraction works. The attack force makes the central node, but it's not just some computer. It's basically a super AI, and it's about the size of a Titan. So the Titan rises up to kill them all. And just as they're doing that, one of the groups leading a diversion basically got control of one of the drills. And
he just Leroy Jenkins in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So fantastic.
It's really well written. So I'm giving you the quick hit. If you wanted this more in detail, go read the book. It's a pretty badass moment. As always, the very last second, the great hero saves them all. But as the main processing unit dies, this chain reaction, because of course it's a chain reaction, happens, and the whole chamber begins to fall apart. And so the remaining 18th Legionnaires just start running back to their termite drills. But while they're doing it, they're grabbing stuff. They're like, this looks might be important. And just grabbing random things, like early Fallout. When you're playing early Fallout, you're just grabbing random stuff to go sell later. They're just grabbing, here's a toaster. Here's a CPU from one of the Men of Iron. And they grab it all, jump in the termite drills, and escape. So After the battle, the emperor personally commends the 18th Legion for their actions in the assault on the Tempest Galleries. He directs the manufactorums, I always pronounce that wrong, and recruitment centers to place a precedent on rebuilding the 18th Legion because he wanted to show everyone how much he valued loyalty and bravery amongst his soldiers. Interesting side note, some of the other legions weren't overly thrilled by this.
It's every time anybody gets something. All of the legions with their primarchs, everyone's unbelievably jealous of everything forever.
Because they're being overshadowed. Now, from that, we're going to jump a little bit to post-unification wars. Now, the challenge is even with the emperor's edict to resupply the 18th Legion, they were still a minuscule force because it's not easy to make a space marine. At this stage, the emperor only had Terra to pull recruits from, and Terra had spent the last millennia waging a war across it, and he still had to supply recruits to the other 19 legions, because we still had 20 at this stage. As such, the 18th Legion had to be deployed in a unique fashion. Firstly, they were used only as support. So they fought along the 11th, the 8th. They didn't fight with the 1st, because the 1st were doing some crap that needed to stay quiet. Exactly. But over time, the 18th Legion began deploying largely with the regular military, non-Astartes humans.
They also weren't the Salamanders yet. They were known as the Dragon Warriors for a while.
So. We're going with 18th Legion. It's just easier. What I like about this is that they were deployed in battles where a few space marines could turn the tide without a need for a full legion. And mostly they were deployed to handle events behind the main thrust of the Great Crusade. Because as the Great Crusade pushed outward, the bulk of the military was the front lines, obviously, as it should be. But the galaxy is a big place. Warp exists and humans will human. So you're going to get these small Xeno incursions behind you. Space Hulk suddenly appearing. Imperial governors deciding that they didn't want to be part of the Imperium anymore. All of these require almost an entire regiment of Imperial Army or not even a full regiment, just a few extra Astartes on top of it. What made the 18th even more special, though, is that they were deployed in groups of like less than a dozen, not as warriors, but as commanders, because the 18th is one of the few ones where we do get stories that, as we talked about this during our Space Marine episode a long time ago, about how Astartes are light years intelligent. They can process data. They are incredibly tactical, much more so than even a very good guardsman general would be. So for a lot of the incursions, the Salamanders would actually become the general of the fight. But there's a funny bit to that story, which I do like. When we covered the Space Wolves, we talked about how Remembrancers didn't want to get placed with Space Wolves because they'd have to run alongside a Space Wolf while he ran headfirst into fire wearing power armor, and the Remembrancer was wearing a tunic. So it wasn't really an ideal moment.
Also, usually a colorful tunic and white so you could immediately be seen.
Yeah, and also...
But let's also talk about... There's a couple of things we didn't jump into on that, which is the Salamanders were and still kind of are known to be the guys that, as you're saying, everybody wanted to be sacrificed. They keep that mentality.
Yeah.
So they keep getting into shit. Multiple high-level commanders were like, the Salamanders will effectively just are a doomed chapter because they constantly... run into sacrificial things. Did you really need to sacrifice yourselves? That's what we did. So if you remember, so you're like, we're with the Salamanders. Cool.
It's really funny. The Imperial Army starts going, I got Astartes with me. That's going to be crap. It's the 18th. This next battle is going to. And so in effect, if the 18th were there, your day was going to be bad. What ends up happening though is, after the events of the assault, to Brad's point, though, is after the events of the assault at Tempest Galleries, the 18th Legion start doubling and tripling down on this like stoic, suicidal attack of foes. Not to be confused with the exact same way every other Legion does this, by the way. Like, look, every time...
Sacrifice is their thing, dog. Come on.
As opposed to...
Sacrifice is their thing. Look it up. It's in the codex.
It is. Now tell me the legion that doesn't sacrifice themselves for the great glory.
I think you meant to say that the Salamanders do it sacrificey times two.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I have for a long time, and I'm going to die on this hill. We needed 10 legions. We could have had 12 and lost two. That's fine. We didn't need 18. It gets repetitive and it drives me insane.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
The holidays are almost here. And if you still have names in your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful. With thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else, you'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods is a fantastic collection of products that are unique, funny, and clever. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. For me, the holidays are full of family and entertaining, which is a lot easier with a combo of a robust bar and weird games to play. So after Fart Bingo and a Whiskey Smoker, I decided to double down on some infusers and a game called Poorly Explained Movies. Hopefully, this will get me through it. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, diehard sports fans to foodies. You'll find thousands of gifts of new ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations.
I can't wait to talk about the stuff that happens when the Emperor meets Vulcan.
So, after 50 years of great crusading, the 18th Legion are still struggling to get a solid footing. Their battle style, the combat attrition is a problem. And it is, to Brad mentioned earlier, the point where some of the Imperial High Command are wondering if the 18th Legion will survive. Ooh, ominous.
It is a big thing. Like, to do. I know, but there's like big characters that are like, hey, man, they talk about doing something, but like, how do we make these guys stop jumping in front of every bullet?
Yeah, I know. We also had this problem with Emperor's Children. The first Legion, don't forget, were almost destroyed because of the Ragdan. This happens every freaking time. So obviously, if we're talking about a Legion about to fall into oblivion, I wonder what's going to happen next. Oh yeah, Primarch. Anyway. Vulcan. All right. I really do stand by my statement. We had too many Primarchs.
You step away from Vulcan.
I mean, look, let's call it a spade a spade. If we had only 12, the Horus Heresy is a 5-5 thing, we don't lose much. And there are easy 8 Primarchs to get rid of. Tell you what, the next time we do our Q&A, which will be December 2025, I'll make sure, let's talk about which are the, 8 Primarchs we can get rid of. Spoiler alert, Jagadai Khan's one of them. Not my fault GW doesn't care about him. It's not my fault. GW, give me anything.
You know what? You know why we need Vulcan? Screw this. You know why we need Vulcan?
Vulcan's fine.
Tall, tallest of the Primarchs. He's also ebony jet black.
I like how you care about that so much.
100%.
It's all I want to be.
So tall. Not just tall, tallest.
Yeah.
He's also glowing red eyes, and he is ebony black, gigantic. And just bananas strongman strong. He's wildly strong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Vulcan's cool. Vulcan's actually one of the ones I would keep. Jakadai is not. Anyway. all right. Let's talk about Vulcan. Vulcan, like every Primarch, is sent to a random planet in the galaxy to face temptations of power and or corruption. And Vulcan gets more the Sanguinius Gilliman treatment, where he's tempted with leadership. The idea was to show him, you're a better leader than the Emperor. And therefore, you would betray the Emperor, seeing the flaws of the Emperor. Didn't work on Vulcan, but it's a better method than what they did to Mortarion, which is, let's just make him, or freaking Conrad, let's just make him crazy.
Also, Mortarion's story, it was just like, hey, man, does everything suck? Yes. Huh? Cool. Continue on sucking.
So Vulcan lands on the planet Nocturne. Out in the Ultima Segmentum, which is on the right side of the galaxy, Nocturne sits a little bit below the galactic core. And probably because of its location, it's a nightmare world. Nocturne has a few things going against it. Just a few.
I mean, massive tectonic disturbances.
Yeah, which we're going to have to cover, unfortunately. So Nocturne. So the first issue with Nocturne.
It's just volcanoes blowing up all over the place.
Yeah. So here's the thing. They wrote this. There's a giant moon that's locked in a binary like satellite orbit with Nocturne. And this causes, quote, massive disturbances on their forces, because GW says that this causes significant volcanic activity.
There's so many things in this sci-fi fantasy magic thing that you don't, that you're cool with. You're going to put on your glasses with the tape in the middle to go on the fact that the moon.
I'm loading the pocket protector.
The moon's force would not cause this.
Yes, because it wouldn't. I'm sorry, because I read it and I go, oh, that's pretty interesting.
Yes.
And I have Google, so I go to Google. And yeah, the moon can push a volcano over the edge if you have a really close, but it doesn't move tectonic plates. Tectonic movement is what causes volcanoes. So this is just wrong. And it annoys me when people put science into something and the science is wrong. That's what drives me nuts. It was the same issue I had with freaking Fenris, where it's like, how does anyone live on Fenris?
John, I hate to tell you this, but if you really don't like the science being wrong, you're going to really hate the internet.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. I'm sure there's some writing on the internet. No, it's exactly how the moon does. And also, there is no moon. There it is. Thanks, guys. Awesome. Aside from the volcanic activity, Nocturne also is totally awash with solar radiation.
Yeah, they apparently just don't have an ozone.
Yeah. Well, which this one, by the way, actually is correct, because the volcanic eruptions would erode it the same way that the chlorofluorocarbons did, like when we used to have aerosol cans. So there would be no ozone on this planet. So that part, they were correct on. I think they were lucky with guessing, but they were correct. As a result, all the people of Nocturne's skin is described as obsidian black. Now,
which is awesome on the tabletop, by the way.
It is, because it makes them really easy to paint.
Yes.
But the flip side of that is, I will give GW some credit here. What this implies to me is that everything that's going on in Nocturne is a function of the age of technology. The reason I say that is it took humanity hundreds of thousands of years for our genes to add in basically skin tone to adjust for solar radiation. That took hundreds of thousands of years. These guys did it in, I don't know, 300.
So, hey man, radiation. I play Fallout. Well, you get all kinds of stuff happening.
Yeah, it's not how that works. But anyway, what I'm thinking is that
it isn't Fallout.
I know. Fallout's also not correct.
What?
I know.
You take that away.
Okay. But so what I think this is, because this is John theory, but the reason why I think this is, we learned this with Leagues of Votan. When the Votan ancestors first got to the galactic core, they used genetic modification to actually adapt them to be able to survive there. So I think that's what you saw here. I also think that, much like with Fenris, they state, is a function of kind of almost an experiment that was going on during the age of technology. I could see Nocturne kind of falling into both of those. Being, we call about Fallout, like the way Vault-Tec goes, all right, well, we're going to pick a couple planets and let's just do some weird crap there and see what happens to the people there. And we do some other weird crap too. That's what I think Nocturne was. I think Nocturne is basically Vault, you know, 107.
That wasn't a good vault.
It was not a good vault. It was like three good ones. Anyway, the other problem is that because it was settled in the early part of the Dark Age of Technology, Nocturne barely survived this. Binary planet, all these issues. Every 15 years, by the way, because of the binary thing, the two planets get close to each other and these giant waves crash all over the planet. Accurate. Thousands of volcanoes explode and earthquakes cover the land. Not accurate. And then it's dinosaur time because the entire sky gets blocked out with volcanic dust. All the plants die. Winter sets in for, quote, a quarter of a year. Now, I call this out again. That's what they wrote. All the volcanoes explode. They fill the sky with ash. The sun is blocked out. And it lasts for 4 months. Brad lives in Ohio. I live in Michigan. I would love a three-month winter. That would be awesome. That would be a giant step up for both of us.
Yeah.
Right? Three-month winter?
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, talk.
I mean, easy peasy. Oh.
Yeah.
Talk to me in February.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's the third month of my winter was when I start wanting to kill myself.
Also, it snowed in Halloween.
Yeah. It's going to snow on Thanksgiving, it looks like, too. But anyway, this time, by the way, is called the time of trial, because sometimes GW just phones in a naming mechanic. To protect the people of Nocturne, this is the cool thing about Nocturne. There are seven sanctuary cities built around it, and they're all independent kingdoms. But during the time of trial, they all open their gates to all the refugees to the outlying lands, because people basically go out and they farm for these like 15 years in between. But when this comes in, they then run into the sanctuary cities for protection. Vulcan arrives on Nocturne during one of the times of trial, which obviously is completely over by the time he turns two. So GW spent a bunch of time explaining this whole thing, and then it has no effect on Vulcan whatsoever because he's gone before the next one anyway. Just saying it. So anyway, but there's a bigger problem with Nocturne. The biggest problem with Nocturne is Drukhari. And we talked about our last episode, we talked about Drukhari. The Drukhari need to make raids in order into real space, into the galaxy. And these raids, they murder people and they capture slaves, take them back to the Dark City. This, though, is occurring well before Vec, because Vec doesn't rise up until M36. We're talking M30 right now. So these are the early ones. These are the ones where they're...
This is early M30. Yeah.
So the Drukhari had at least one, but likely numerous webway gates all on Nocturne. And because this planet's isolation from the rest of humanity and the Dark Age of technology, it became perfect prey for them. Easily accessible, largely unarmed local populace, fun times. So for hundreds of years, by the way, Slaanesh was born in M30, and this is around 832 of M30. But 800 years, 700 years, the Drukhari have been raiding Nocturne, almost like livestock style, where they're letting them, we'll go grab a bunch of them, we'll let them repopulate, we'll go back through and do it again. And so what happens is the people there, whenever a Drukhari raid happens, you know, the bell rings and everyone just goes to like their special shelter to hide. Like the movie Purge, which I also haven't seen. I don't think I'm missing out.
You're not.
Cool. All right. Anyway, back to Vulcan. So discovered at birth and brought into one of these cities on Nocturne. Vulcan is another Primarch, which is labeled as a prophesized hero.
I mean, hold on, though. It's pretty easy to prophesize somebody's going to be a hero when the baby is jacked and gigantic. Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah, he's got, yeah, this baby had abs.
Yeah. You're like, hey, man, I think that baby's going to be somebody. Yeah. You're like, why? Because he's four times as big as a normal baby and he's currently doing pull-ups. Like, I think he's going to do well.
He's discovered by a blacksmith named Nebel, who's part of the Promethean cult.
Oh, what? Story. This is a big deal.
I know.
We're
on like footnote 42 of our, we're trying to tell this thing. We're having more side stories.
Come on. The Promethean cult still is important in Salamanders to this day.
But this cast is turning into Witcher 3, where we're doing more side stuff than we are actual main story. So anyway.
Oh God, Witcher 3. Come on now. If you haven't played Witcher 3, what is wrong with your life? Also, two, if you're playing Witcher 3 and you haven't completely lost track of the main quest because you've got so many side quests, you're playing it wrong also.
Oh yeah. First time I beat Witcher 3, I'm like, I actually don't know if I just won the game or not.
I don't even remember what I was supposed to do.
So anyway, the people of Nocturne had developed their own like philosophy / religion. I'm not going to get into trouble here debating the difference between the two because it's just semantics. But anyway, but their philosophy was known as the Promethean cult. Now, there's two Promethean cults, by the way. There is the Promethean cult of this time, and there's a Promethean cult post-emperor. So we're talking about the original, not the latter. But the Promethean cult was a set of beliefs that center around nobility, self-reliance, altruism. Under the cult, you're supposed to be the best you can be, striving toward perfection, but personal glory.
Yeah. Listen up, emperor's children.
Yeah, but it's for the good of all and not for personal glory, which is fair. You're supposed to be fully self-reliant, but also always self-sacrificing. Anyway, this planet blows up every 15 years. That's the best way to explain it. So everyone's like, hey, every time the planet blows up, be cool to your neighbors. As opposed to Fenris, where every time the planet blows up, they go, murder all your neighbors.
I just want you to know that right now, John and I are in separate places recording this, because if we weren't, I definitely would have thrown something at him, because he just summed all of the awesomeness up in that.
Yeah.
Don't make things trivial, John.
It is trivial. Their whole thing is, we should be self-sacrificing. We should do all these things, but also we should be perfect. But also. Yeah, no.
Pedantic.
It's just, this is Renaissance man BS that I hate. So anyway, all right. For Vulcan, though, there's one more key piece. They believe that a savior was going to arrive at some point, and the savior would drive the darkness away and uplift the people of Nocturne, like Sanguinius, Lorgar, Ferris Manus. Look, we don't need 18 Primarchs. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, Vulcan's adoptive father, Nebel, saw in Vulcan the potential to be the savior for the teaching. Because as Brad said, this is the biggest baby I've ever seen with bright red eyes. So he then endeavors to take this baby. And this is, when we say baby, guys, like, Primarchs age quickly, to teach him everything that he knows. And so 2 years later, Vulcan knows everything there is to know.
Because he did an 80s montage training video.
Yeah. He's also
the best. Vulcan is the best at learning things.
So by age three, Vulcan's the largest and smartest being on the planet, which also, a little fun side note, how much did Primarchs eat?
Several.
Because like,
It's got to be a pretty big bill. That's all I'm saying.
Let's say, because I have a child. I've also had dogs, where you take from puppy to full grown. It's impressive how much they eat. We're talking about some of these planets, like with Sanguinius, that didn't have a lot of food. In order for him to grow this fast, you know
how
what
much
mean?
Of a bummer it is. Everybody's starving, and you're eating 40,000 calories.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You look over there and like, hey, what happened to the silo of grain? Oh, Sanguinius ate it all. Well, he does keep us safe, I guess. I'll go a month without food. Good God. Anyway, weird side note. So within a year, he takes over his father's forages. He starts crafting his own weapons and actually making up his own technology, by the way. The one thing that we talk about, Vulcan's really cool, is he's a great forgeman, but he also is technologically savvy, as opposed to Fulgrim, Ferris Manus, Rogel Dorn.
God. Come on now. Give him two sticks of gum, rubber band. He'll make this MacGyver happen, baby.
He's more MacGruber, but anyway.
Oh, God.
I told you the throat rip worked. Oh, God. All right. So when Vulcan's 4 years old, the Drukhari attack the city. And by the way, 4-year-old Primarch is full grown Primarch, for the record.
Let's talk about how much of a bummer this is for this particular, because we just did Drukhari real space raids.
You just
planned this out. You're like, these guys have never posed any problem at all.
Watch this. Yeah.
Dude, we don't even need to pay attention. We barely, it's not even, this is autopilot, baby.
So the Drukhari raid happens. Everyone runs and hide. Vulcan grabs two hammers, throws on the boots of mighty ass kicking, throws a little extra pumps into the top of them, you know, gets them nice and tight, and walks into the town square. Now, the cool thing about the people of Nocturne is he walks in the town square. Him just doing that, people start coming out of hiding to join him. So it's not like he does this whole fight by himself.
No, the people of Nocturne, he inspires everybody.
Yes,
and they start fighting.
Yeah,
this is really cool because he just tells people, you can fight back. I love this. It's like an anti-bully thing. It's great.
Exactly.
Cool.
And so they do this whole thing. Now, again, as usual, a fight breaks out and the Primarch and the people are doing stuff. So the Primarch against Drukhari, who they're not slower at this stage. They're just as fast as current Drukhari. So I think we know who did most of the fighting, but the people were present. Luther, looking at you, Luther. But anyway, after killing over 100 Drukhari himself, I think he may have even blown up one of their ships, the Drukhari retreat. And Vulcan is standing victorious in the middle of the city. Word spreads to all of Nocturne, and all of the settlements reach out to Hesoid, which is where he's based, and they send emissaries to greet Vulcan. And Vulcan teaches them how to forge weapons that they can use against the Drukhari, tactics, strategies. And I had to look this next bit up three times because it makes no sense.
Yeah, this is kind of dumb. It makes me angry on this one.
Because it is funny.
What should happen is everyone immediately goes home and puts 47 harpoons and fortifies everything. Every single place is ready to defend themselves instantly.
No, instead they just declare victory and have a party. They're like, cool, Vulcan shows how to beat the Drukhari. We're not going to test any of this. We're just going to go, he was right. Go team awesome. Let's have a big party. That's it. And because they say, we're going to, always, they all got together and said, we're going to stand up to the Drukhari next time they show up. And Vulcan went, yeah, gave us a big thumbs up. And then they have
yub.
Now, they then have a giant tournament of strength and crafting, which unfortunately was not crochet. It would have been a lot funnier if that was one of the ones. Like Vulcan just knitting a sweater.
He would have definitely done an Afghan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it would have been a really good sweater. But on the eve of the great tournament, a lone wanderer enters Hesoid, described as being pale, which is compared to everyone there who has obsidian skin, and wearing silly clothes. That's what he's described that. He asked to enter the contest.
By the way, when I first read this, I couldn't help myself because they do actually say silly clothes.
Yes.
I just imagined the Emperor just wearing like a clown outfit. Just like,
oh,
yes.
No. Oh, I went the other way.
Juggling.
I'm thinking of it. He's dressed like you were in the 80s.
Oh, God. He's wearing hammer pants.
You got hammer pants. He's got a like a 11
cardigan colors. With no shirt on.
Yeah, cardigan. No shirt, numerous colors all through the cardigan. His hat is really well bent. Because remember, we used to, now it's all flat rim. We used to bend the hats. Oh, and it's backwards. Oh, yeah. Maybe he's got some, what were the?
Oh, he has a mullet for sure. Oh, and he's got Oakleys on.
You're doing Oakleys? I wasn't going Oakleys. I was going to go what were the ones the quarterback for the Bears used to wear?
Oh, you're wearing the sheriff glasses?
No, not the sheriff. The ones with the had like shades in them. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You had a pair of those. I know.
You're talking about McMahon's glasses.
Yeah, the McMahon glasses. Just saying. Just that would have been a good look. So anyway, he comes in. He's wearing silly clothes. And the people laugh at this stranger because he says, I'm going to challenge Vulcan. But this whole thing's really weird story because everyone's saying to him, the Emperor... spoilers, Emperor, but it comes in and says, I wish to challenge Vulcan. Everyone says, oh, you silly goose. You could never, no one will ever beat Vulcan. But then there's 100 other people who are also competing with Vulcan. So anyway, the reason it's silly that anyone else is there is that this is in effect a strongman competition where it's Eddie Hall and like me. I am strong. I'm big. You know, I'm almost two meters tall.
You are kilos. Not Eddie Hall strong.
But yeah, Eddie Hall. Oh my, Eddie Hall would juggle the dumbbells I lift with. That's what we're talking about difference. So apparently other people were looking at Vulcan, who's the biggest Primarch, and going, I think I can outlift him, which is basically the story of how Brad's back hurts.
I would have beat him. I would have won this contest versus Vulcan.
Yeah. How many times did a person minding their own business lift more weights than you? And you decided while minding your own business,
I was about to say not while I was around.
Yeah. Just minding their own business, lifting heavier weights than Brad. And Brad goes, I don't need a lower back.
Well, they did lift heavier weights than me for a while. Yeah, sure. I couldn't do anything after.
Yeah.
You know what? Screw this. I need to tell that because I told John recently, I went to the gym and I was already not doing well. And I said, hey, man, I'm really hurt. Because somebody was lifting weight and I got ego lift and I had to lift more. And then I hurt myself and then I had to ride my bike home from the gym while it poured down rain. And the initial response from John was, you deserved everything that happened.
Yeah. Like you have some very tragic issues with your body. Those are not your fault. This one. You have a bunch of them, though, that are 100% your fault.
That's just
absolutely
so sad.
Unadulterated. Yeah, Brad did that to Brad.
Riding a bicycle home in the pouring rain. Yeah. My back hurts so bad.
Yeah, I have a bunch of them, too. I have a bunch of like weird scars, that kind of stuff. Well, what happened there? I'm not smart. That's what happened there. Poor impulse control.
But let's go back to the emperor. But let's do one thing with that. Remember, the emperor appears as either whatever people want him to see, but effectively he appears as whatever he wants them to see. So yeah. He shows up and he's just a guy to them right now.
Yeah, a guy in weird clothes.
Yeah, but he's not showing up as the traditional.
Let's get into... And I apologize, Salamander fans. I know I am dumping all over their lore. It's about to get worse. All right. So they have a contest and some of them are just dumb. Like at one, they're holding two anvils over their heads. Anyway.
Hold on. Because they declare, Vulcan goes with the emperor. They declare that whoever wins this loses the contest has to declare fealty.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that.
Cause this is a big deal.
Yeah. The emperor is a dick. I always forget about that part of it. Yeah. You have to declare fealty to the emperor. Anyway, I do like that they have this whole competition. It's staged over 8 days, and the only one that the GW bothered writing was holding anvils over their head. Was there a tug of war? Did they do Atlas stones? Bodybuilding? There had to have been. There had to have been a greased up moment.
For me, there's at least an entire day of flip cup.
Flip cup. I mean, it's got to be what... They
cornhole, flip cup.
Just cornhole. The emperor and Vulcan playing cornhole, but it's a mile apart.
Yeah.
Eventually, it's a tie. There has to be a tiebreaker. So the two contestants are sent off on a hunt, and they're given 24 hours to forge their own weapon and then go hunt down, and I'm quoting here, one of the reptilian salamanders, the Nocturne Volcanoes. Sorry, I have a child, and I like going to zoos. Salamanders are not reptiles. Salamanders are amphibians. They're like frogs and toads. They breathe through their skin. They're born as tadpoles. I have no idea what the GW was doing here with this writing. They have zoos all over the UK. Really, really good ones.
Call them a drake.
Fine, they call them drakes. But like, they go to Mount Deathfire to go hunt down these salamanders to find the largest drake there, which in England...
Drake, thank you much.
Yeah, it's a term for dragon, but also male duck. Just so you know, when you see a male duck...
Duck is fearsome. If it's large enough to ride, it is fearsome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, duck, no. Goose? I don't...
Canadian goose, those things are monsters.
Yeah, you don't mess with geese. It's the old thing of, it's every time a goose hisses at you, you're like, look, I know I'll win this fight, but I don't want to, if it bites me in the face, I have to spend the rest of my life with a scar on my face and explain how that happened.
Get your ass kicked by a goose.
Yeah. I got bit by a swan. Like, that kind of sucks. Back to the actual writing. Up on Mount Deathfire, Vulcan finds the largest fire drake he's ever seen and smashes it in the head with a hammer, killing it. And then he grabs it and starts walking home. But oh no, what else? What could go wrong? The volcano erupts while he's on it.
Hold on. Back up though. If you're going to be a shit about it, you have to go with the what happened on Mount Deathfire.
Yeah, a Mount Deathfire. The volcano suddenly shook and Vulcan fell. And with one hand, he held onto the edge of the cliff because below him was lava. And with the other hand, he held his drake and he couldn't pull himself up. And so he hung out there for 6 hours.
I hate this part.
Of course you do.
He literally would just chuck the lizard up and do a pull-up. He'd do a set of pull-ups.
Nope.
And move on.
Nope. The strongest, largest Primarch couldn't do that. Anyway, story gets worse. So while hanging there after 6 hours, as his grip is beginning to fail, again, Primarch. The mysterious stranger arrives, but the mysterious stranger is on the other side, and it sees Vulcan about to fall, and does, I'm just going to tell you what he does, guys, deal with this story. By the way, the emperor is holding a larger drake than the one.
Like a real gentleman, he throws his salamander over the lava so that Vulcan can cross the street.
No, you got that wrong. He throws it. He then jumps on the lava and jumps up to pull Vulcan up.
I mean, yes, but I'm just saying. It's better when I say the gentleman reason.
He throws his drake into the lava and then jumps on it and then jumps off it.
Sometimes you got to double jump. Sometimes you got to kill Yoshi to get to the other side with the double jump, John.
God. Anyway, they I mean, I will say it actually made me laugh because it made me think of Curse of Monkey Island. That's something you would do across lava. You'd have to throw something and then jump on it, but I digress. All right, they get back to Hesoid, and Vulcan is declared the victor because he has a salamander and the stranger didn't. But Vulcan, and is a noble person, says, no, he lost. And he kneels in front of the stranger, declaring him the victor. And because in his mind, anyone who valued life over pride was worthy of his fealty, which I almost choked on the irony of that statement being said to the emperor. Like, no. And at this moment, of course, the emperor reveals his true self, which is a pale person dressed very funny, but also the emperor. So we'll have that. I'm always torn with the emperor doing these things because I'm always convinced that he's like Thor in Ragnarok, where he actually looks like the emperor the whole time, but has a little veil in front of his face. But the next thing the emperor does is, of course, shitty. The emperor tells Vulcan he's going to come with him and he's going to join his forces as they conquer the stars. And Vulcan said, yeah, I'd love to go, but I can't leave Nocturne, my people, undefended. They're my people and they rely on me. And the emperor said, yeah, of course, I'll garrison the force here and they'll keep the people alive. Don't worry about it. Just kidding. He didn't do that at all. The emperor looks at him and says, well, his duty is not to one world, but all of them. Why protect a single world when through duty, the emperor can protect thousands? And Vulcan goes, oh, okay, fair point. And just ditches Nocturne. That's what he does. And he joins his legion. That's the story. Story sucks. Sorry. Vulcan's cool, awesome. But Emperor and Leman Russ, cool story. Emperor and Gilliman, cool story. Emperor and Dorn, cool story. This one I don't like, just being honest.
It's fine.
I think Vulcan's cool. I think Vulcan's great. I just think the Emperor's story is like, the mysterious stranger has arrived. They're going to do a contest of strength that we're not going to actually add a lot of detail to. Whatever. All right. But actually, that's a good break point, though, because the next week we're going to get into the salamanders as they go into Horus Heresy, all die inside Horus Heresy, and some of like the Vulcan actions post. I hope you all like it. And then next week, we'll dive more into salamanders, or as I like to call them, the not quite ultramarines of the Space Marine Legions.
Lame.
So until next week, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
Have you tried going back and playing the games you played as a kid?
We're talking nostalgia overload, fun facts, and seeing if we can remember how to beat games we haven't played in 30 years.
Come join us. Retro Recall is all about nostalgia and reliving those years of zero responsibility.
Each episode, John makes me play a game from our youth, and I challenge him to do something in that game, and then the loser has to try one of the worst games ever made.
It's fun, it's terrible, but most of all, it's a look back at simpler times.
In the first episode, we try Double Dragon 2, and let's just say that John is still having nightmares about some of the terrible games he had to play.
You say that, but I'm not the only one. The Ghoul School?
Dear God.
Check out Retro Recall on YouTube and your favorite audio podcast platforms.
There are links in the main show description, or just search Retro Recall.
Retro Recall. Come join us. Games are always better with friends. Retro Recall.